This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's Creature Feature, a spotlight on one of the Wildlife Hospital Dunedin's extra special guests.
And Jordana White, manager at the Wildlife Hospital Trust, joins us once more to introduce us to a creature who's been a visitor to the Dunedin Wildlife Hospital. Morena, lovely to have you with us, Jordana.
Morena.
So who are you going to introduce us to today?
Today we're going to be talking about welcome swallows, or watto.
The next question you ask me is, do I know anything?
Oh, you've done this before. What do you know about welcome swallows?
Well, every time I speak with you, Jordana, I realize how little I know.
That's okay. That's why we're here. And Oftentimes, as the listener may have figured out, I'm researching these birds myself because I don't necessarily know heaps about them either. And that's truly the case with welcome swallows, because I think, like probably a lot of other people, I was a little bit confused about these birds. I thought they were possibly an introduced species. So it was, you know, we think house sparrows, you know, European sparrows, that kind of thing. I just sort of wasn't sure about that. But then it's a pretty good indicator to me, if they're showing up at the wildlife hospital and we're taking care of them, that it is in fact a native species. So that is indeed the case. This is a native species. However, they self-introduced from Australia in the 1950s. So it is a newer immigrant to our country, but now I guess we would consider them naturalized citizens. They did visit as early as the 1920s, but they really started kind of taking hold and establishing themselves here in the 50s. So that is why perhaps they're not in the canon, as it were, of our native birds. You know, we don't think of them in the same way as we do maybe tuis or kiwi, but they are indeed New Zealanders.
Whenever I think of swallows, I just think of their amazing aerobatic skills.
Exactly. Yes, that is absolutely correct. So we will talk about that a little bit, but they're incredible flyers. Well, we'll talk about that right now. They the way they move, I mean, they're really distinctive in terms of being able to tell what they are in the sky and seeing them fly around, because they do have that really kind of aerobatic, they flit really quickly. They often are kind of going in sort of a circular motion, and they're darting and moving really, really fast. So we do have some other native species that move in similar ways. And those are often, of course, the birds that are catching insects on the fly and on the wing all the time. But what's one of the distinctive things about them is they have that really forked tail. They're actually called tail streamers, those little bits that come out, which I find very pleasing, the tail streamers. So they're quite, you know, they stand out a little bit when you're watching them move around in the sky, which is cool. This is a passerine bird. Are you familiar with that term, a passerine?
I'm not.
So a passerine is any bird of the order of Passeriformis, I guess. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, which is, I often think of them as just basically little forest birds, but it is a little bit more sort of identified down to this type of, in this order. But they're also kind of known as perching birds. So the passerines have the specific arrangement of their toes. So it's three toes pointing forward and then one back. So it just means they're really excellent at grasping and perching on branches.
Almost like the thumb.
Yeah, exactly. Like a little wraparound thumb. Yep. And this is really interesting. So the 60% of birds fall into this category. So it's quite a big order. They're just one of these little passerine birds. I shouldn't say just, but you know, it's quite common to see this type of birds. And do you have any theories on why they're called welcome swallows?
Arrival at a certain time of year?
Amazing. Gold star. Absolutely. So in Australia, they're called welcome swallows because they kind of herald that spring has arrived. I kind of think of spoonbills that way here in Dunedin. If we see spoonbills around, it's kind of summertime, basically. So it's a similar kind of species, and in terms of their predictability of when they turn up in a certain place. So they are migratory generally. In Australia, they will head to warmer climates for the winter. They don't move around as much here in New Zealand in terms of migratory patterns, but they do that as well. It's just not as strict. So as you know, it's a small bird. It's just about 16 centimeters long, and they weigh in. They're pretty lightweight, so as little as 9 grams up to about 20 grams.
How many Tim Tams?
Chocolate covered raisins. I don't know if you, not even a full Tim Tam, not even close. Yeah, quite lightweight. And they have, I think they're actually quite pretty. So they don't, often sit still long enough for you to see what they look like. But they have sort of a mottled gray belly, but then they have a really bright orange on the top of their chest and under their bill, and then a lovely blue color on the back of their head and halfway down their back, like they're wearing a little blue cape.
And look, just if you are curious and you do want to see this for yourself, a reminder of nzbirdsonline.org.nz, which is what I'm looking at now to try and anticipate any of the questions.
You got a cheat sheet. Very good. Yeah, the pictures there are really nice because I think it is quite unusual to see them just sitting still like that. So you get a really good look at their colors. They're quite colorful, which is really nice. Yeah, nice looking little bird. And I will say, I had this thought in the back of my head when I was preparing for this today. I was like, I feel like I've seen a lot of people that have tattoos of swallows. Have you noticed that? Because it's, again, that those distinctive...
Usually in pairs too.
Yes, exactly. And I thought, what? There's got to be something to that. So allow me to go down this rabbit hole with you, because I looked this up, as any good researcher will do. And the swallow tattoos, it seems like the origin of that, of swallow tattoos in popular culture comes from sailors. So a lot of people in the Navy will have the most popular tattoo, I guess, at least in the UK Navy. And there's a few, they represent a few things. So every swallow that a sailor will have as a tattoo represents 5,000 nautical miles that the sailor has done in their career. So it's sort of like a little hash mark, but in the form of a swallow on their skin. And then so for reference, the circumference of the Earth is 21,639 nautical miles, which is 4.16 swallow tattoos. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody with 0.16 swallow tattoos, but now if you do see somebody with that, then you know that they've gone quite far in their careers. And they're also, as I mentioned, they're known for their migration patterns, and they do travel long distances seasonally. So a swallow tattoo for somebody also sort of represents being able, a sailor is always able to find their way back home, which is kind of a nice sentiment.
Well, I had wondered about those swallow tattoos, so thank you very much.
As had I, and I guess I just sort of never really thought to look it up before, but that's why. And they're lovely looking birds, so it does make sense that people want to have them on their arms forever, I guess. They're fairly widespread around most of New Zealand, so we've all seen them, of course, here in Otago. There is a notable exception that they're really not in Fiordland, so they don't love dense bush or high altitude, so that probably makes a lot of sense for Fiordland. And I actually even saw some welcome swallows on the Auckland Islands last season when I was down there in the sub-Antarctic, so they do have quite a big range. So although they are a newer arrival to New Zealand, they have certainly made themselves well at home. Now, one thing about welcome swallows is they will often be found co-located in the human environment. So they really actually seem to prefer to nest on man-made structures versus natural structures. They will nest in caves, for example, but they do like to be sheltered and out of the sun for their nests. And so oftentimes you'll find them
getting under the spouting and guttering.
Yes, or under the eaves, for example, under bridges are really common to see them. Up on like under beams and maybe a covered veranda, for example. And I think without realizing it, probably most of us will know what their nests look like because they are quite a common nest. They make them out of sort of little bits of mud. So they get wet mud and then they kind of build that and it dries in place with other little things, other plant material and that kind of thing. It looks like a little like upside down igloo kind of. In fact, I just was in Wanaka 2 weeks ago and did see a number of nests underneath a covered
and quite
porch.
Small.
Yes, quite small. Yes, indeed. Because they are really small birds. I mean, the chicks must be, just a couple of grams, like two paper clips worth of weight, pretty tiny. So it means that their preference or their habits of building their nests on those sort of human structures does mean that they interact with the human environment quite a lot. So that's reason that we would get a welcome swallow like the one that we had most recently was that they, they'll fly into windows and they do sometimes get caught by cats, but I think it's a rare incidence for us just because these birds are so fast. I think if cats are getting to them, they're more likely getting to the nest than anything. So the most recent patient we had, a welcome swallow patient we had, was from Northeast Valley, and it was found on the ground, and it was quite unwell. And we're not, and I would, again, I just want to just, unfortunately, this one didn't survive, but it wasn't injured, and we couldn't really find any underlying reason. It wasn't behaving like some of our, like tuis, for example, that might have a toxicity that they pick up from a certain rhododendron species. This isn't a nectar feeder, so they wouldn't be sort of at risk for that kind of poisoning situation. But we actually just think it was maybe an elderly swallow. It was just perhaps coming to the end of its life. It wasn't necessarily an injury or a disease, an illness, but just, was kind of coming to the end of its life. So at least we could support it through that period and make sure that it was comfortable. But there, we have had a few of these welcome swallows also in the past, and frankly, we don't have a lot of success with them. And part of the reason is that they have such high nutritional needs. These birds fly so much. They expend so much energy in a day that they need to constantly be eating, constantly catching insects, constantly eating. And they don't, in the hospital environment, it's so unnatural for them that they don't eat on their own. So we actually have to feed them, force feed them essentially in the nicest way. But it's really hard to stay on top of their caloric intake. So that's one of the challenges that we have, just nutritionally keeping ahead of that curve.
Gosh, geez, it'd be interesting to do the extrapolation of how much food that would be equivalent for a human being, for example, over a period of a day.
Yeah, I'm actually quite keen on learning that myself. Yeah, and I did see some figures about how far they fly in a day, like the equivalent. I didn't write them down because I couldn't verify them. I don't know how any, I don't know where those figures came from, if somebody was just making them up or just, kind of guesstimating, which is be the best I could do anyhow. But yeah, pretty astonishing the amount of distance these birds will put in. And I don't think it's because they're flying necessarily, one big long stretch. It's because they're doing all that flitting around back and forth and in circles and up and down and all of that. So I think they just, they are, if we could teach them to be a little bit lazier, like myself, the caloric intakes would could drop.
Yeah, their metabolism must just be racing
cranking. It's probably, yeah. I would say probably, I think of, like a hummingbird as something that, that just expends so much energy, like that just could slow down a little bit.
Well, sorry to hear that it wasn't a favorable outcome for this one, but maybe it had reached its time.
That's right. And that's, it does happen. And we don't necessarily see it that often. I think they probably go off, into the bush to live their last little moments. But in this case, somebody was sharp enough to see that it was in distress or was just not acting as excitedly as a swallow normally does and got it some help.
Well, we learn so much every time we talk with you, Jordana. Thanks so much for joining us again for another edition of Creature Feature. All the very best to you and the team at Dunedin Wildlife Hospital. If you want to find out more about them and how you can support the fantastic work that they do, then just take a little listen to this.
The Wildlife Hospital Dunedin treats sick and injured native New Zealand species right here in the heart of Aotearoa's wildlife capital. Their expert veterinary team patches up more than 500 patients every year, returning the majority of them back to the wild where they belong. You can learn more about the hospital, including ways to support this charitable trust, at wildlifehospitaldunedin.org.nz or follow their Facebook page for more fabulous creature content.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.